Assembly Audible podcast is sponsored by Promis. Promis is the leading manufacturer of fully electric servo presses.
Hello and welcome to Assembly Audible. I'm your host, multimedia editor with Assembly Magazine, Jennifer Pierce, here with an exciting episode and an opportunity to learn from someone who has definitely influenced and inspired me. We're joined today by the founder of Manufacturing Happy Hour, Chris Lukey. Chris is an engineer and one of the pioneers ushering in a new day for manufacturing, where industry-wide manufacturing is becoming more communicative. Podcasting, for example, is a great way to share insights, talk about current issues, and learn about basically almost anything. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Jennifer. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's start by talking about your podcast, Manufacturing Happy Hour. Give us a little background of how that all got started.
Yeah, so Manufacturing Happy Hour started off when I was a salesperson in the automation industry out in San Francisco, California. And you mentioned it in your intro, right? Manufacturing is becoming more communicative, if you will, whether it's through video content, podcasting. Manufacturing Happy Hour covers all of those, because at the end of the day, Manufacturing Happy Hour started as a way to talk about the trends and technologies impacting our industry the same way you'd talk about them as if you were having a beer with someone, right? You wouldn't use a bunch of buzzwords. You'd get real. You'd share stories that illustrate the points you're talking about. And that's really where it started. I was looking at our industry and realized, hey, we use a lot of jargon to describe what we do, right? And if you know what that jargon means, it can be meaningful. But really, let's talk about this in a way that is more approachable. And speaking of approachable, you know, I had just moved as a salesperson for Rockwell Automation from Houston, Texas to San Francisco, California, where the demographic of customers I was calling on was much younger and they consumed content and made buying decisions differently. So rather than, let's say, a face-to-face meeting that you'd always have out in Texas, I needed a way to reach my audience virtually. I'm a millennial. I was working with a lot of millennials that were calling the shots. So I wanted to reach them through videos and podcasts because that was the way they wanted to be reached. So there are two elements to this, right? Manufacturing Happy Hour started as a way to simplify a lot of the tech jargon, if you will, that was around the manufacturing industry. But on the flip side, there was a necessity element to it, right? If you want to reach a younger audience, you need to communicate with them in the ways that they want to be communicated with. So podcasting, social media, videos, all of those are great ways to reach that next generation of manufacturers and buyers.
Cool. So you started, it was about 5 years ago?
Yeah, just about 5 years ago. It's starting to get to the point where it's a little hazy as to how long ago it started. But yeah, it started, really, it was kind of this campy video series where I was just recording all the episodes on my iPhone when it first started. And then it would have been around mid-2019 that I really turned it into the platform it is today, which is basically a long form podcast. And it's like TEDx meets How It's Made. It's a leadership podcast disguised as a manufacturing podcast.
I love that. And then so last question about manufacturing. Well, maybe not the last, but another question about Manufacturing Happy Hour. Was there anybody else in manufacturing doing what you were doing or what you started back 4 or 5 years ago?
You know, it's funny, right? There were a couple people out there, but it was very thin ranks at that point, right? Even now, there's still an opportunity for more creators to come into the fold. But back in 2016, 2017, I was kind of the only person that was doing it in a lot of ways. I can definitely say no one was sharing videos of someone drinking a beer and talking about automation technology on LinkedIn at the time the way I was doing it. And I think it's wonderful that more people have gotten on board, right? Because I took a lot of my best practices from other industries, right? Travel bloggers had existed for a long time. They'd been sharing their stories through video, podcasts, all of those platforms, right? So the things I was doing in the manufacturing industry weren't anything new per se. I was just one of the early adopters in the manufacturing industry that said, hey, all of these communication modes, social media, video, podcasts, they work for other industries. Why not we make them work for manufacturing as well?
Okay, awesome. We've communicated back and forth about this podcast and a couple of other things. And I know, let's see if I can find it. You said that you like to talk about podcasting and how it's sort of underutilized, an underutilized medium for manufacturers. You said something along the lines of you saw people pick it up during, manufacturers pick it up during the pandemic and then sort of abandon it. And then you also went on to talk about, you know, that they missed a real opportunity for leveraging the strengths of podcasting. What do you mean by that?
So in terms of like what people can do to get more mileage out of their podcasts, right? I'll answer it in that perspective. So I think at the start of the pandemic, I did see a number of podcasts popping up, right? No surprise. We're stuck at home. We need a new way to reach our audiences, our customers. So why not start doing a podcast? But here's the reality about podcasting. Unlike other, let's say, mediums where, hey, you can kind of understand how the Instagram algorithm works, for example, and you can make an impact very quickly building up an audience, say by posting the right reel, understanding how the algorithm works, etc. There's no way to hack it in podcasts, right? In order to grow your audience, it just takes time. And I think a lot of people miss some of the fundamentals about what a podcast is, right? You know, Jennifer, when are you listening to a podcast? For most people, it's usually when they're in the car, when they're at the gym, when they're, you know, doing something else. For example, they're probably not dedicating 100% of their attention to the podcast. So, you know, rule number one when it comes to podcasting is you got to make it such that it's something someone can consume in an easy fashion, right? Make it about stories, don't make it about products, for example.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd say the thing where I see podcasting be underutilized, right? A lot of people get discouraged when they don't have thousands of subscribers after the first week, the first month, the first 6 months. I mean, the reality is it takes years and months to build up a really dedicated podcasting audience. And in order to get there, one, the podcast needs to be good, right? If you're on there sharing a bunch of product information or a bunch of internal company jargon, you're probably not going to build up that audience because your podcast probably isn't any good, right? But the reality is, I think where most people miss the mark is podcasting is a tremendous opportunity to repurpose podcast content. And that's where if anyone follows me on LinkedIn, you'll see a lot of the things I'm sharing are a 30-second clip from an episode, a video clip from that episode, or a great quote that my guest shared that I've doctored up into a nice image that looks good on LinkedIn as an example. Even if you're just getting started with your podcast and you don't have thousands of listeners or hundreds of listeners for that matter, you can still leverage that podcast as an incredible tool to repurpose content and really up your online presence, whether that's on your website or on social media. I can share more on this, but I'm curious if you've had any other questions pop up as I've been sharing this monologue right now.
I like YouTube and I like social media. That's where I like to consume content. So I'll listen probably to bits and pieces. So it just kind of is interesting to me, like, is the definition of podcast, a podcast even changing? It's almost just like people have a show. It's like your own show.
Yeah.
And the form, the function stays the same, but the form continues to change, maybe? I don't know. It's all kind of new to me, honestly.
I think that's a fair point. And I think having a show, if you want to take that multimedia approach, is the more strategic direction. For example, yeah, Manufacturing Happy Hour started only as a YouTube channel. It was that way for like 3 years. Then I turned it into a long form podcast. And then, you know, in this day and age, it's really a multimedia platform. The primary area people consume it are the 1,000+ listeners that are listening to it every week on iTunes, on Spotify. But the reality is there are a lot of people, like you said, that prefer, hey, I just want a 3-minute bit. I want a 5-minute bit, right? So for those people, I have some really quick content on Instagram if they just want to catch it while they're scrolling, or LinkedIn for that matter. Or I've also started doubling down on the YouTube channel again, right? There are a lot of shorter snippets from interviews, or shorter, let's say 5 to 10 minute interviews that exist on that platform. So, you know, I think, and I want to share an important point here, because I think a lot of folks feel they need to be everywhere all at once right out of the gate, right? They're like, oh man, we need Instagram, we need YouTube, we need our podcast, we got to do all of these. And then by trying to do too much at once, they miss out on the opportunity to really capitalize on one of those platforms right out of the gate. So for me, like I said, I was really focused solely on YouTube for a while. Then it was on podcasting. Now that I have processes and partners that help me produce the show and an existing audience that can give me feedback that says, hey, Chris, we love what you're doing on the podcast, but we'd really like to see some shorter content on YouTube. I can take that feedback and go where my audience wants me to go. I think that's one of the most important lessons, whether you're talking about starting a podcast, starting a blog, starting a video series, is you need to be thinking about who is my ideal target audience? Who is the ideal person, maybe buyer that wants to listen, that would listen to this podcast? And how do I create content that resonates with them? And how can I put it in the places that are already hanging out? So that's my lesson there. I think for a lot of manufacturers, LinkedIn is obviously a great platform to put that content. But hey, if you can create content through a podcast or a video series and you can use LinkedIn to point back to that content, also a great strategy that just starts gradually taking things to the next level.
I think that this is a savvy approach. And I think that there are a lot of manufacturers yet to jump on board. And I bet you we see a lot of growth over the next couple of years. I mean, I can already see, like, okay, I follow, you know, some of the companies that we work with. I try to keep up with their pages, and I can see some of them start to step up their game a little bit with social media. And so, I don't know, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to me because this is my jam, you know, but
yeah.
I think it'll be a lot of fun to see how it grows in the next couple of years. And thanks to you, people like you who kind of paved the way. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping it grows, and I'll offer a bit of a challenge to the manufacturing audience out there, because I want it to grow. I want to be very clear. Podcasting is hard. Being consistent is hard. Like these things that you and I are doing, they look pretty easy on the surface, right? But in order to crank out that content on a monthly, bi-weekly, weekly basis, whatever it is, it takes discipline, and people can't get discouraged if they don't see the results like they're looking for right out of the gate. That's why so many podcasts end. I think statistically it's like, you know, by the 10 episode mark, because people just throw in the towel because it was more work. They weren't getting the reaction they wanted to right out of the gate. I will offer one other piece of advice, and then I'll shut up for a second here. Well, the one thing I want to point out, that when we were talking about, hey, how can we make podcasts work for someone that's just getting started, right? We talked about repurposing the content, so that way you can give it a boost on platforms where you already have a presence. But I think the most underrated strategy around podcasting is, and you'll hear this from a lot of my other podcasting peers, is let's say you're doing an interview podcast like the one we're doing today. Companies should be interviewing people that are their best customers or people that they wish were their customers. Those are the two people I'd target, because first of all, if you're interviewing people that are your customers today, chances are it's going to be easier to get them on the show, right? They know you, you have a relationship with them. And also you're shining the spotlight of someone that you do business with and that you have a good relationship with. What I'll say, the even better strategy is start talking and interviewing the people that you wish you were doing more business with, right? Think of who your ideal customers are. And when you invite them on your podcast or on your video series, whatever the platform is, right? You know, you don't need to make it like a sales pitch. You don't need to say, hey, I'm from so-and-so company and we'd like to have you on our podcast, right? You could be like, hey, we're hosting a growing industry podcast right now, and we'd love to feature your story on this show. We think it would really resonate with our audience of manufacturing leaders. That is a great pitch to start building a relationship with a prospect, maybe a customer you don't know as well yet. That might be my number one piece of advice for B2B podcasters, manufacturing podcasters, and content creators out there.
Have you ever heard the saying that a lot of people quit right before they find success?
Absolutely. I can fill in a quick, thought that you just got popping into my mind, right? Like, I think people need to look for the micro wins when they're first starting out with a podcast or a video, right? Sure, you're probably not going to have tens of hundreds of listeners right out of the gate, but all it takes is that one person that reaches out and says, hey, I love what you're doing, right? Maybe it's in a LinkedIn message. You got to like kind of bottle those victories up And that's what can keep you going until you really start seeing the bigger wins, like thousands of subscribers, thousands of people signing up on LinkedIn to your newsletter, whatever that may be. I'm a big believer of spending your time and getting in the same room as the people who you want to be like, or who have some element of their career that you want to mirror, or a skill you want to learn, for example. So love that advice.
And that actually brings us to our next question. What did you learn from your guests? And is there anything that you've learned from your guests that you feel like could apply specifically to our assembly audience?
Let me think about that. I'm thinking about the assembly part, but I'll share a general answer in the meantime. So I think one thing that could resonate with everyone is that, over time, as I've talked about technology on the show, what I've really realized is this is a human business, right? And I mentioned it at the start of our interview. Manufacturing Happy Hour is a leadership podcast disguised as a manufacturing podcast. So a lot of the big lessons that come out of the show are timeless leadership tips, right? And it's someone putting it in the context of a manufacturer and how you treat your employees and how you bring in new people to the workforce, for example, right? It's not so much, I'm not learning about, I am learning about the technologies, right? But technologies change over time, right? The technology we're talking about today might not be the same technology that's relevant in 2 to 3 years. So I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned is a lot of it comes down to the human element, how you treat people, how you bring in the right people to your teams. And that's what can make a real difference for manufacturers, is you get those people that are always learning, that are staying innovative and thirsty, as we were saying in manufacturing context, bringing those people into the team. So that way you can put new technologies into practice, for example. If I'm a company that's focused on assembly, maybe this is my advice for the assembly companies, right? You're not just worried about your team, but you're focused on your partners that share your values, your ethics, those type of things as well. It's not just, can this person get me this part or supply this part in the time that I need it? You're looking for companies that align with your values, because I think that those are the folks that are going to be a lot easier to work with. So I hope that answers your question in some way.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, our listeners, the majority of our readers and listeners are in management at assembly plants. So I have a feeling they're looking for some specific information, and I'm just trying to tap into that a little bit.
Yeah, I think what one thing it comes down to, for all the manufacturing interviews I've done, only a small segment of them have been like assembly manufacturers, for example. But I think what it comes down to is taking some of these timeless leadership lessons that I've been talking about around, let's say, building a strong company culture, getting the right people into your team. I think it's about phrasing those in stories that have taken place at assembly companies, for example, right? To hear that, hey, it's important to build a strong company culture, right? In order to do that, you need to exemplify those traits at a leadership level. That piece of advice is not necessarily new, but Dan Voigt from Blendtec, which is an equipment company out in California, he shared how he does that on a regular basis at his company, Blendtec, right? Through the different activities they've done, how they've implemented, since the pandemic, a hybrid work model that still has processes in place that keeps different teams interacting. I think it's taking those leadership lessons or taking those business lessons and translating those into stories that have taken place at, let's say, assembly companies, similar to how Dan has articulated that at manufacturing companies, as an example.
Okay, cool. Today on Assembly Audible, we're going to try something brand new. Are you ready for industry innovations?
Bring it on.
Okay, so industry innovations basically is, we have a list of industries that we cover. We're going to give you 60 seconds for each industry that we cover. And during the 60 seconds, you can say, rattle off anything that comes to the top of your mind. It's on your radar. It's something you'd like to talk about on a future podcast. It's basically like a brainstorming session.
A bit of a lightning round.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there really is no right or wrong answer. And so, industry innovations.
I like it. And 60 seconds is the limit, right? I can't go 61. And I want you to hold me to those rules, because I think it's better for me to answer it in 53 seconds or 58 seconds rather than even having the option to ramble on.
I will hold you to 60 seconds, strictly.
Deal. I love it. Okay. I love it.
Okay. So I'm getting my timer.
All right. My clock is up. I am ready to stick to the limit as well.
Okay. All right. So, industry innovations. The first one is aerospace. Go.
So one of the things about the aerospace industry is most people can't talk about the innovations they're doing for that industry because, you know, if they have a contract with, you know, one of these space companies, they're not saying, oh, I'm making parts for X company in this industry. So I don't have as much knowledge on that. What I would say for that one is, hey, when we're talking about innovations in that industry, I would look at some of the things that are going around from a macro level and a pop culture. I shouldn't call it pop culture, right? But, you know, Elon is launching rockets into space. I would look at the areas that you're interested in, you know, from let's say those, I don't know what they are, the rockets that kind of land themselves afterwards. But if you want to take a deeper dive, go dissect the technology from there. Because unfortunately, when I'm doing a lot of my interviews with aerospace companies, I can't get into a lot of the details of what they're making for that industry.
Okay, are you ready for industry innovations number two?
Let's go.
All right. This is innovations in appliances. 60 seconds, go.
One of the things I like about appliances is when we talk about, hey, what is the Internet of Things, for example, in manufacturing? Appliances are a great way to see what that actually is in practice, right? The Internet of Things is things on the internet, right? And how they're working together inside of your ecosystem, right? So the same way you could have a toaster or a fridge that's, you know, a smart fridge or anything that goes into your smart home, take those lessons and apply them to what you want to get out of your workplace, for example. Do you need smart instructions so that you can better assemble the things that you're making at your assembly station, for example? I would look for lessons from an Internet of Things perspective in the appliance market and apply that to manufacturing and assembly.
Gold. All right. So moving along. Oh, this next one is it's a huge industry for assembly. It's automotive. Are you ready?
Yep.
Go.
All right. So automotive is one of the industries that I've been most excited about since I've been following it since I was out in the Bay Area when we were still on the cusp of the EV revolution. What I like about the EV market, it's not necessarily an innovation I'm going to talk about, but just how individuals can disrupt an entire industry and get bigger companies to make the moves, right? Do I think that GM and Ford would have started investing more into the EV market over time? Yes, but had it not been for Tesla really kickstarting that and making it an in vogue thing and making consumers willing and excited to pay for, let's say, a electronic vehicle, or I should say an electric vehicle, I don't think we would have seen the movements that we have in this industry, right? So look for those people that are making an impact, that are causing the big old organizations to make moves faster.
Delivering some gold here. All right. Are you ready to keep going? Do you want a break?
But nope, I'm ready. This is a endurance test.
Yeah, it's
sprint. I'm not sure which it is. I'm in.
Thank you, by the way, for going along with this.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, experienced podcasters are probably the people you want to test these things out on, because, you know, I'm not getting over the fear of being on a microphone for the first time, if you will. So
yeah, well, and that's why I asked you. I was like, he's willing to be my guinea pig part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Next up on our industry innovations, we have medical devices. Ready? And go.
So I was just talking about medical device with an individual named Christopher Lafayette, who runs a metaverse company called The Gatherverse, and he's been studying the metaverse for a long time. The reason I liked what he was doing in this space, because he's also looked at, hey, how does the metaverse impact manufacturing, right? And he's talking about designing, you know, a lot of what I think of the metaverse in terms of manufacturing right now is digital twins. And he's talking about having this virtual surgical theater, if you will, where you perform a surgery in the metaverse, right? Where there might be certain specialists around the world that you need to perform a certain task. But if they're in Costa Rica and you're in Connecticut, it might be hard to do that. But he's talking about designing products to fit this surgical theater. So I think it's a good lesson in digital twins and leveraging that for manufacturing.
Nice. All right.
I almost went over my time there. I had to wrap that one up quickly.
I feel like these are all podcast episodes within a podcast episode.
Episode 121 of Manufacturing Happy Hour, if anyone's interested. Yes, that's where you can find that one.
Okay. The next one, I don't know anything about. It's DFMA assembly. So
I don't know anything about that one, actually. So if there's an opportunity to, we'll skip that one.
Okay.
That would be 100% winging it.
Me too. So maybe I need to investigate a little bit further about that topic. Okay. So the next one then is green manufacturing. Are you ready?
I am absolutely ready for this one.
All right, go.
So what I like about green manufacturing, I actually just shared some content on it this weekend about around is how it's not just about a buzzword to talk about how your company is sustainable, right? There are real opportunities to be more profitable and productive when you're doing green manufacturing, for example, you know, recycling the type of materials that you're using. One of my past podcast guests was talking about that, where in order to be more sustainable, you need to look at, hey, what am I taking out of my process and what can I reuse that might otherwise go to scrap, for example. This individual, this episode hasn't come out yet. It might be out when this comes out, but he was also saying how companies that have a more positive economic outlook are the ones that are investing more in sustainability right now. And I thought that was an interesting, I'll call it a correlation. That might not be perfect, but I love where he's looking at it from that angle.
It's like California is a state of mind, man. Right.
A little bit. I as someone that lived in California from the Midwest, I'm actually cautious about saying that, right? Because I think we can be dismissive of what they're doing in that regard. But let's remember, the EV revolution came out of California. It's the world's fifth largest economy. So I didn't mean to contradict what you were just saying by any means. I think part of it is just trying to appreciate the things that they're bringing to the table, and then innovators are finding ways to really put them into practice.
Cool. All right. We have three more. Is this getting redundant?
No. Keep rolling. Okay. Keep rolling. This is your show. I'm just here to provide the content.
All right. Lean manufacturing, go.
All right. Lean manufacturing is one of the ones where I'm a little less experienced. I was speaking, it'll end up being a reference to one of my podcasts in episode 108, I believe it was. I was talking to an individual from Black & Decker, Antonio Hill, that is really a master of taking lean manufacturing and applying industry 4.0 practices to improving their operation. Antonio Hill is one of the individuals that I've seen take one of the most pragmatic approaches to leveraging Industry 4.0 to get real results throughout hundreds of facilities in their operation. So that's what I'll say on that topic.
Cool. All right. Two more. Electronics assembly, go.
Electronics assembly. This is an interesting one, given that we're going to see more electronics assembly in the U.S. based on the CHIPS Act and everything that we're doing right now. I think the electronics industry, and I worked in this industry out in the Bay Area, and I'm learning more about it. There's a new book out called, I think it's Chips War, talking about how the electronics and semiconductor industry got to where it is. At the end of the day, people are saying chips are more valuable than oil right now, right? So that's why countries are racing to start producing them on their own. So this is a much bigger macro situation that I'm interested in paying attention to over the years. But I would say, if you're not in the, like myself, continue to get more educated on this industry, because it's going to be impacting a lot of the things that happen in the world in the coming years.
Okay. All right. Ahead of schedule. Last one. This is the last topic in industry innovation. Okay. Thank you so much for playing along. Machinery assembly, go.
machinery assembly. So OEMs are some of my favorites, right? Because I've gotten to work with equipment manufacturers as a salesperson, and there are a lot of equipment builders here in the U.S. I think for a lot of the lessons that come on Manufacturing Happy Hour, whether we're talking about company culture, Industry 4.0, finding ways to implement technologies that really serve your customers, OEMs are a great test bed, or they can implement those things a little quicker because they're usually smaller companies, right? I was given the example of Dan Voigt earlier in this interview, how he's created really a second to none culture at companies like BlendTech, for example. You know, I would say if you are running an equipment builder out there, and you're struggling to hire talent, if you're struggling to implement automation, listen to Manufacturing Happy Hour, because there are a lot of tips and tricks on how you can do that on the show.
That concludes the first ever Industry Innovations on Assembly Audible. Thank you, Chris Lukey, for your
No problem.
For your insight. The last question, what's on your radar? What are you predicting? You know, I love talking about trend forecasts. I know you talk about cybersecurity, labor shortage. I'm just spouting off all the things I hear, you know, people say skilled gap, race to automate. Those are some of the notes that I had jotted down. So anything you want to discuss or talk about before we close?
Can I add one thing to that has been on my mind? I have not gotten to research it as much recently,
but
it is a topic that I'm interested to see how this plays out in the coming weeks, months, years. And that's the over 40,000 people that have been laid off by big tech companies, for example, right? And I'm going to start posing questions about this to LinkedIn. I'm going to do an interview about this on Manufacturing Happy Hour, guest still to be determined, as of this recording, right? But, you know, I look at all these people that have been laid off at tech companies, and they cover sales folks, they cover engineers, they cover customer success. It covers the gamut of, let's be honest, a lot of areas, or a handful of areas, I should say, that manufacturing companies traditionally have not hired or have an opportunity for hiring. I see a lot of opportunity for manufacturers to create their first customer success organizations. I see a lot of opportunities for manufacturers to really double down on their digital marketing and, let's say, sales development rep and lead qualification efforts. I feel a lot of these people that have been let go, and this is the world according to Chris, I don't have statistics behind this, but I feel there's a tremendous opportunity for manufacturers to start hiring those people, because especially the roles I just mentioned. We'll get to engineering in a second, but customer success and sales development, those are groups that can be remote individuals. You do not need them to live in the city where your manufacturing company is right now. And manufacturers have already proven that they can manage remote workforces through the pandemic. So to me, I'm excited to see if and how manufacturers start leveraging all of this talent that just hit the street. That, let's be honest, they're in an industry that is adjacent to manufacturing. It's tech. Manufacturing is a lot of technology, right? We're hardware, right? Hardware versus software in a lot of ways. So if you can find ways to bring those people in your workforces where people are talking about how they can't find enough good talent right now, you just had over 40,000 people hit the street in the past coming months. So I am interested to see how manufacturers stand up customer success organizations, how manufacturers really enhance their digital marketing and their sales development teams for, let's say, qualifying leads and looking for those new customers. And then, hey, are we going to start seeing this generation of engineers and more engineers coming out of school, colleges, trade schools, whatever they may be, right? Are they going to be entering manufacturing jobs for the past decade plus, they've been going into software jobs, Facebook, Google, you know, you name it, right? So I think there's an interesting opportunity for manufacturers right now. And I'm excited to see if and how people double down on what looks like a tremendous opportunity.
Well, that's great. And I'll definitely be keeping tabs on Manufacturing Happy Hour. And that's brilliant. I hadn't thought about that. So great observation. And thank you for bringing that up on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to kind of go freeform there here at the end.
I really like it when people, you know, feel free to talk about whatever they want to talk about and bring up interesting new things. You know, I don't want it to be like a restrictive environment. You know, I want it to be fun and insightful. So thank you so much.
Yeah. And keeping in mind, you know, you mentioned a number of trends that I just totally brushed over, right? Workforce, cybersecurity, all those areas. I mean, this will be one final lesson I've learned from Manufacturing Happy Hour. For your audience of manufacturing leaders out there, a lot of these topics can seem really overwhelming at first glance. Like, they're a big initiative that requires an insane amount of capital dollars. Whether you're talking about cybersecurity, whether you're talking about digitally transforming your operation, I would look for those initial first steps that you can take without an insane amount of investment, right? Like, I'll just talk about cybersecurity really quickly. This is going to be a big topic forever, as far as I'm concerned, or at least for the foreseeable future, right? I shouldn't say forever. That's hyperbole. But hey, the reality is a lot of people are vulnerable right now, and a lot of people aren't taking basic first steps, which is, hey, figure out what your inventory is. What assets do you have that are networked, right? Just get a baseline of the things that are there. This is something that there are plenty of companies that can help you do this, right? And I just want to start seeing manufacturers not get overwhelmed by some of these big trends, these big topics, but realize there are simple ways to start taking action today, whether that's digital transformation, whether that's hiring new people into your workforce, whether that's Industry 4.0, right? These don't have to be big, scary initiatives. There are a lot of manufacturing leaders out there, many of whom that I've talked to on Manufacturing Happy Hour, that are finding little ways to get started in these processes. So that'll be my final thought to address some of the big trends that you had brought up just a moment ago.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jennifer. This was a blast. I appreciated my first lightning round in quite some time. And thank you for putting together such a thoughtful interview.
Absolutely. So our listeners can keep up with you, of course, on Manufacturing Happy Hour, right? Is there anything else that you've got coming up that you want to plug real quick?
You know, I will be going on a pseudo tour this spring, which means I'm going to be throwing happy hours in various cities. Ones you can look out for are Cincinnati, Grand Rapids, Detroit, couple others in there. But hey, for the audience out there, I would say two spots to connect with me, right? First, subscribe to Manufacturing Happy Hour, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Honestly, if you type in manufacturing, it's going to be one of the first shows that pops up. And then the other thing I'll say is, hey, connect with me on LinkedIn as well. Shoot me a message with context, right? Doesn't need to be long, but one sentence saying, hey, I heard you on the Assembly Show with Jennifer. Would be great to connect, right? Happy to connect with people on an individual level there. So other than that, a lot of trade show appearances, keynote speaking, hosting more events like I was hinting at. So 2023 and beyond are going to be really, really fun years.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you for tuning in to Assembly Audible with Chris Lukey. Make sure you're following us on our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. We've also got two exciting trade shows this year in the spring and fall. You can learn all about that on assemblymag.com. This has been Assembly Audible. Thanks for listening.